Okay, thank you very much for the introduction. Today, I would like to talk about the connection between viscosity, quark gluon plasma, and string theory. These three topics seem to be unrelated to each other. I will try to convince you that there are some connections between them that are non-trivial. So the plan of my talk is as follows. First, I will remind you what is the viscosity at the level of simple undergraduate physics. Then I will talk about a context in which viscosity appears as an interesting physical quantity, namely the heavy ion collisions in which people are searching for the quark gluon plasma. Then I will jump into a more formal topic that is a byproduct of string theory, a technique that comes out from string theory called gauge gravity duality that allows us to do calculations in a class of theories that where no other methods apply. And then I will concentrate on one particular application of gauge gravity duality, namely the calculation of viscosity of some strongly interacting systems. So first, let us talk about the viscosity. Viscosity is a very old notion that was introduced into physics, I think, by Claude Navier in 1822, into what is later called the Navier-Stokes equation. So let us look at this graph that I copied from Wikipedia. Namely, let's imagine that we have two plates, and between the two plates is some liquid, and let us slide one plate with respect to the other while keeping the lower plate at rest. So the upper plate is moving with the velocity of u, and it drags the part of the fluid closer to this upper plate with the velocity of u, while the part of the fluid closer to the lower plate tries to remain at rest. And therefore, we set up here a differential flow where fluids at different height move with different horizontal velocities. And there will be a friction force between these different layers of fluid. So this friction force leads to a finite force that we have to apply to keep the upper plate moving with a constant velocity u. So the friction force between the two plates is the product of three variables that I write down here. One variable, A, has a simple meaning of the area of the plate. The bigger the plate, the bigger is the friction force. The friction force also depends linearly on the gradient, on the gradient of the velocity, dUx over dy. But the friction force also depends on one quantity that is the intrinsic property of the fluid, that is the viscosity. So eta here is the viscosity. And we can define the viscosity for fluid. And we can also do the same experiment with gases and like air, and we would measure the viscosity of air. Maxwell was the first person who understood the microscopic origin of the viscosity of dilute gases. At the time of Maxwell, the kinetic theory of gas is not a well-established theory. It was considered as an hypothesis. And Maxwell, using this hypothesis that the gases consist of molecules that mostly goes in straight line and sometimes bump into each other. Using this picture, Maxwell gives the following estimate for the viscosity. That the viscosity of a gas is proportional to the product rho VL, where rho is the mass density, v is the typical velocity of a molecule in a gas, and l is the mean free path of the molecule, that is the distance, the average distance that a molecule travels between consecutive collisions. Using this estimate, Maxwell then derived a very interesting consequence that at fixed temperature, the viscosity of a gas is independent of pressure. And we can see that right away from the formula here. If we have a volume of a gas and then we increase the volume by a factor of 2. Then the mass density is reduced by a factor of 2. At the same time, the mean free path of a molecule also increases because now the gas is more rarefied and it takes a longer distance for a molecule to find another one to collide with. And simple geometry tells us that the mean free path increases by exactly the same factor of 2. On the other hand, if we keep the temperature fixed, the velocity of a molecule does not change. And so this product, rho VL, mass density times velocity times the mean free path, remains constant when we change the pressure of a gas, keeping the temperature fixed. That it was a very counterintuitive prediction that Maxwell found. He expected that the denser, the viscosity is, in some sense, a measurement of the thickness of a gas. And so if the gas is denser, the viscosity has to be bigger. So Maxwell went to Stokes and asked Stokes whether Stokes would know any experiment that confirm or contradict the prediction of the kinetic theory. And Stokes told him that there was one experiment that showed that the viscosity of air depends on pressure. So Maxwell wrote in 1860 the following, that such a consequence of a mathematical theory is very startling, and the only experiment I have met with on the subject does not seem to confirm it. So at that time, Maxwell also had a problem explaining Cp over Cv for simple gases, and he was ready to abandon the kinetic theory of gases as the correct theory. But then Maxwell had a second thought, and during the next few years, with the help of his wife, he actually designed and carried out an experiment on his own to measure the viscosity of air at different pressures. And he reported the result in 1865 that the viscosity of air is independent of the pressure when the pressure changes from 1 over 60 to 1 atmosphere, almost 2 orders of magnitude change in the pressure, and there is no change in the viscosity. So Maxwell, the experimentalist, confirmed the prediction of Maxwell, the theorist. Now, before going on, let us pause and talk about one seemingly counterintuitive behavior of the viscosity that underlies the puzzle that Maxwell encountered. Imagine that we have a gas, and imagine that we can turn off somehow the interaction between the molecules in the gas. According to Maxwell's formula, the viscosity would go to infinity. That is because the interaction, as we turn off the interaction, the mean free path of the particle becomes longer and longer. But the viscosity is proportional to the mean free path, so it must go to infinity. On the other hand, turning off the interaction means that we would have an ideal gas. And in ideal gas, we should not expect any dissipation. So why the viscosity going to zero, not going to zero, but goes to infinity? And the explanation for this behavior is the following. We are actually talking here about a subtle non-commutativity of two limits. One limit is the limit of infinitely weak interaction, where we turn off the interaction between the molecules. But another limit that is implicit in this question is the hydrodynamic limit. That is the limit when the distance between the outer plate is bigger than the mean free path of the molecules. Only in this case, what we measure in the experiment correspond to the real viscosity of the thing in between. So if we try to turn off the interaction between the molecules of the gas, and we still want to measure the viscosity, we would have to scale up the size of the experiment as we turn off the interaction. For example, if we want to measure the viscosity of the neutrino gas in the universe, we would have to make a huge apparatus. And that apparatus will show us that the viscosity of the neutrino gas is very large. So there is actually no contradiction here. So the viscosity of gases has been understood since the time of Maxwell, but the viscosity of liquid is much less understood. And to see the challenge, you just need to look at the table of the viscosity of different liquids, say water, glycerin, mercury, and you see that there are different liquids with very similar density can have vastly different viscosities, like the glycerin and water here. And there are examples where the viscosity of one single substance, in this case glycerin, can change by many orders of magnitude. Here from the viscosity can change by almost 4 orders of magnitude, while the absolute temperature changes by less than a factor of 2. So the viscosity of liquids behave in a much more non-trivial way than the viscosity of gases. And you can find liquids that have viscosity that is very large. There is an experiment in Australia that claims to be the longest continuously running experiment in the history of physics. So in 1930, someone poured tar on top of a funnel. Tar looks like solid under normal circumstances, but over a long time scale, it flows like a liquid. And here you can see one drop almost falling down. 8 drops has fallen down since 1980s, 1930. No one has ever witnessed the moment any drops fall down. After the 7th drop, the university installed a camera. People at the university installed a camera, but the camera did not function at the time when the 8th drop falls down. So the viscosity was estimated from this experiment. The viscosity of tar was estimated to be 10 to the 11 times of water, and this experiment was given the Ig Nobel Prize in physics. Edward Purcell, who was one of the originator of nuclear magnetic resonance, was very intrigued by the fact that liquid viscosity spans such a huge range in many orders of magnitude, while if you look at the liquid itself, the structure doesn't change much. And he thought about challenging Weisskopf to explain this fact. Weisskopf was a theoretical physicist who liked to explain different physical quantity in terms of fundamental constant of nature. So you can read about Purcell's challenge to Weisskopf in a paper that later became famous. This paper is titled "Is Life at Low Reynolds Number?" It's mostly about the swimming of bacteria in viscous media. But in the beginning of this paper, Purcell posed the following question to Weisskopf. The paper is the write-up of a talk given by Purcell at a symposium in honor of Weisskopf. So, but Purcell anticipated that Weisskopf would explain the huge range in the variation of viscosity by reducing it to an exponent of something that varies very little. That is typical theorist way to explain the hierarchy problem. So Purcell added the following. But it's more mysterious than that, Vicky, because if you look at the chemical rubber handbook table, you will find that there is almost no liquid with viscosity much lower than that of water. The viscosity have a big range, but they stop at the same place. I don't understand that. So that's what I'm leaving for him. So that's the question that Purcell posed is the following, that viscosity of liquids is unbounded from above, as we see in this experiment with tar, but it seems to be bounded from below on the viscosity of usual liquid. In this talk, I will not try to address the nature of the viscosity of real laboratory liquids. These are very complicated system where the interaction between the molecules are rather complicated, but I will try to formulate and address a simpler version of this question. Imagine that we have a simple gas where the interaction between particles are simple. Can we play with the interaction strength, make the interaction strong so that the viscosity of that gas would go to zero at some interaction strength? And in the modern context, this question is important for the physics of the quark gluon plasma. So I will spend a few next transparencies explaining what is the quark gluon plasma. So there have been a series of experiments called the relativistic heavy ion collision experiment that have a goal of creating and studying the quark gluon plasma. So the last two in the series are the relativistic heavy ion collider at Brookhaven and the heavy ion experiments at the LHC. LHC usually is a machine that collide proton and protons, but for a month in a year, they also collide lead ions. At the Rick collider, people collide gold ions. So these are very big ions, and they collide them at very high energies. The energy at Rick is 200 GeV per pair of nucleons, which means that these nuclei are accelerated to a speed where speed corresponding to the Lorentz factor of about 100. And at the LHC, the energy is about more than one order of magnitude bigger than at Rick. When we collide these heavy nuclei, big nuclei together at very high energies, you create a lot of particles. So here is one picture that recreates one particular event at the star detector at the Brookhaven National Lab. And you see thousands of particles flying out of a small region. If we mentally extrapolate this picture back in time, at some point in the beginning, all these particles have been in a very small region in space. So there were a moment where the density of the stuff that we created was very big. And that gives people the hope that we can create and study a very dense state of matter called the quark gluon plasma by colliding heavy nuclei. So what is the quark gluon plasma? Let us remind ourselves that particles that participate in strong interaction called hadrons, and these hadrons are divided into two categories. One type of particles are called baryons, so protons and neutrons and other particles. They consist of three quarks, but there are also other particles called mesons, like pions, kaons, other particles that consist of one quark and an anti-quark. So quarks don't exist as a free particle, but they are combined into bound state like this. If we now put a lot of these particles together, then we can think about two different regimes. In this regime, when the density of the hadrons are small, density is small, we can still think about this matter as a collection of a particle that sometimes collide with each other, but most of the time the quarks would exist inside these hadrons. So this state of matter is called hadron gas. But if as we put more and more particle into one volume, at some point these bags of particle, this bound state will start to overlap with each other. And if the density is big enough, it's no longer useful to think about the picture in terms of individual bound state. It's more useful to think about individual quarks, because now these little bags overlap so much that the quark can go from one bag to the other. So in this case, we would have a state of matter which is called quark gluon plasma. Gluon here stays for the particle this quark exchange in interaction. The quark gluon plasma, roughly speaking, is the state of matter where quark and gluons move relatively freely. So qualitatively, it would be distinct from the hadron gas. In reality, the picture is a little bit more subtle than that. Here I'm showing the typical phase diagram of QCD. QCD is a theory of strong interaction. And in this theory, we can increase the temperature or we can increase the baryon chemical potential. The baryon chemical potential is the degree of asymmetry between particle and antiparticles. So if we stay in the at zero baryon chemical potential and go to higher temperature, people now know almost certainly that the transition between the hadron gas phase and the quark gluon plasma phase is not a real phase transition, but there is a rapid crossover. The two pictures are different, but there is no real phase transition that separate between them. And the phase transition can be rather complicated and controversial when we go to finite baryon chemical potential. Now, going back to the heavy ion collisions, it turns out that unambiguous identification of the quark gluon plasma is very difficult. And the reason is that the matter that is created in heavy ion collision lives in a during a very short period of time. When you create a hot region, it will expand, cools down, and becomes a particle. So you have to infer the information about the initial hot state of matter from the particle that are the result of its decay. However, at Rick, starting from the Rick experiment, and we can and also the statement that I'm going to make is also true at the LHC, that the heavy ion collisions create some strongly interacting medium, a medium where collectively this particle behave collectively. And there are two main evidences pointing to that. One evidence is the suppression of back-to-back jet correlation. When we collide proton and protons, sometimes the quarks inside the proton hit each other almost precisely and then deflect at a large angle. And in this collision event, the end results are two jets of highly energetic particle moving in an opposite direction. In heavy ion collisions, frequently we see only one jet that come out. The other jet is not seen. And the most likely explanation of this fact is that we see the jet because they are created near the edge of some hot region. There are two jets that are created in each of these collisions, but one jet has to travel a long distance through the medium. And by the time it gets out, it already loses all the energy. So we see only one jet. The other piece of evidence that I will talk about later is called the elliptic flow. I will talk about that when we talk about the viscosity. Now, suppose we accept this hypothesis, well, that at the in heavy ion collisions, we have created some hot state of matter, like a liquid with some temperature and chemical potential. We can ask the question, can the viscosity of that stuff be measured? The viscosity will be important if you want to model the expansion of this hot state of matter using the hydrodynamic equation. So this problem, the calculation of the viscosity from the microscopic theory has a good side and a bad side. The good side of this problem is that the microscopic fundamental theory is completely known. That is quantum chromodynamics, known from the 70s. But the bad thing about this problem is that the usual method that we use to treat quantum chromodynamics, perturbation theory, doesn't work. Perturbation theory is basically a method where we expand a quantity in Taylor series over some small parameter. And the expansion parameter in QCD is the coupling constant, usually denoted as alpha s. And the coupling constant is the function of energy, or the function of distances. At very high energies, this coupling constant is small, and we can use perturbation theory. But at lower energies, the coupling constant becomes large, and at energies relevant for the Rick experiments, this alpha s parameter is of order 1. So the perturbation theory is not expected to work. At finite temperature, actually, the problem is even more severe. If I look at, for example, the calculation, perturbative calculation of the pressure of the QCD plasma as a function of temperature, at temperature of typical for the Rick experiment, twice the crossover temperature between hadrons and quark gluon plasma, we will see the following, that at the zero approximation, the pressure is equal to the pressure of a free gas. You can neglect all the interaction and read out the pressure from statistical mechanics textbook on the free quantum gases. But then as we take into account the interaction order by order in perturbation theory, we will see that the series doesn't seem to converge into a definite number. And here, different bands correspond to different orders in perturbation theory. Within each order, there is already an uncertainty, but this band doesn't seem to converge very well, unless we go to very high temperature. The viscosity has not. I could not show the same calculation for the viscosity because the calculation of the viscosity has been done only to leading order. But for those kinetic coefficients where we know several terms in the expansion, we see worse conversions. There is no conversions at all at realistic temperatures. So, what can we do in this circumstances? We can try to measure the viscosity experimentally. Unfortunately, we don't have a Maxwell at our time who can do both theory and experiment. So theorists actually go another path. They avoid the real world and they ask whether we can try to compute the viscosity in a simpler theory and then learn some lessons from the simpler theory and try to apply into the case of QCD. So the simpler theory appears in a very unexpected corner of physics, namely string theory. In 1997, Maldacena made a very bold conjecture that there is a duality between theories living in different space-time dimensions. So Maldacena considered an object in string theory called the stack of n D3 brains in type 2B string theory. So at a very naive level, these D3 brains can be thought of as some membrane like soap bubbles, but three-dimensional soap bubble immerse in 9+1 dimensional space-time where string theory lives in. So here I'm trying to depict this stack of n D3 brains as a collection of these soap bubbles. Now, if you have this object, they can fluctuate. And you can ask, what is the theory that describes the fluctuation of these bubbles? And you can describe it in terms of a quantum field theory, very similar to QCD, but different than QCD. One of the differences is that there are scalar fields corresponding to the coordinates of the fluctuation of these bubbles. So this theory is called the n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory. But Maldacena argued that the same object can be described as a string theory on a curved space-time called ADS5 cross S5, where ADS5 stands for anti de Sitter space in 5 dimension. Here is the metric of anti de Sitter space, and times a 5-dimensional sphere. So the anti de Sitter space is a space-time with constant negative curvature, and that's what I was trying to depict here. So this conjecture has not been proven, but there are a lot of non-trivial checks that indicates that this conjecture is correct. And this conjecture is concrete realization of an old idea called holography. The idea of holography is that if we have a theory of quantum gravity, then this theory, we should be able to formulate this theory in terms of the degrees of freedom living on a boundary of space. In the case of Maldacena's conjecture, the theory, the string theory that lives in five dimension can be described as the quantum field theory that lives in these four dimensions. Okay, so there is one equation of the correspondence between gauge theory and gravity that I want to mention because it is important. That is the correspondence between the equality between the expansion parameter on the gauge theory side and some ratio of length in the gravity side. So if we do if we treat the n equal 4 super Young Mills theory in the usual, using the usual perturbation theory, we would draw Feynman diagrams and compute Feynman diagrams. As a result, we will find for a given quantity an expansion, a Taylor series, in terms of an expansion parameter called the Tove coupling, g squared times the number of color, where g is the charge of the quarks. And the number of color can be arbitrary in this theory. Now, it turned out that this quantity is put into correspondence with the fourth order of the ratio of the curvature of space, big R, and the string length, LS. If we take a limit where this coupling constant goes to infinity, becomes very large, then the field theory calculation becomes a mess because we have a series where each term, next term is bigger than the previous term. And it's very non-trivial task to resum this theory. On the other hand, the alternative description becomes simpler because you can think about this regime as a regime where the strings are much smaller than the curvature of the space. And so strings becomes a point-like object and we can replace string theory with a simpler theory, in this case just Einstein gravity. And Einstein gravity is much simpler to deal with compared to string theory in curved space. So here, we map a difficult regime in field theory to an easy regime in string theory. And that is where the power of Maldacena's duality is. It is, the power is that we can now use this duality to do calculations in a difficult regime in quantum field theory. At finite temperature, we can also generalize the duality. If we take this stack of ND3 brains and heat it up some temperature, then this what we will have here is the some version of quark gluon plasma. The degrees of freedom living here form a quark gluon plasma. But according to Maldacena, we can replace that with a black hole. So a quark gluon plasma is put into correspondence with a black hole. And we can use this correspondence to compute the entropy of the quark gluon plasma. We know the entropy of the black hole is given by the Bekenstein-Hawking's formula. It is equal to the area of the horizon. So using this, we can compute the entropy of the plasma at strong coupling. This calculation actually was done slightly before the idea, the Maldacena conjecture. Was formulated, and then it is understood the physical meaning of the quantity of the viscosity here is understood as the entropy of the plasma at very strong coupling. Okay, so now let's go to the question of how we can use this correspondence to find the viscosity of the stuff that we created. How do we, as theorists, measure the viscosity of the system? Turn out that the most convenient way for theorists to measure the viscosity is not to put plates into fluid and shear them, but actually to send gravitational waves through the system. So imagine the following thought experiment. Suppose this screen is some liquid, and we use ink to draw a circle inside the liquid. And imagine that we have a source of gravitational waves that pass through this liquid. What will happen is that this circle will oscillate in shape like this. And there are two ways to think about this. First, we can think about gravitational wave as oscillation of the metric. And so the notion of length changes, and hence a circle becomes an ellipse that oscillates. On the other hand, we can also take a more conventional Newtonian picture of gravitational wave as a wave of gravitational fields. And the gravitational field pulls the fluid and forces it move in different directions. And that's where how the fluid is moving. If you think about this in terms of the motion, of real motion of the fluid, it is clear that viscosity must play a role, because different parts of the fluid now move with different velocity, as you see here. So if you look, if you send a gravitational wave with long wavelength, so that this motion is hydrodynamic, happen at long wavelength, you will find the viscosity of the fluid. The absorption of gravitational wave is proportional to the viscosity. And that this is the essence of the so-called Kubo's formula that relate the viscosity to a quantity called the two-point imaginary part of two-point function of the stress tensor. Okay, so now let's use that to understand the viscosity of the plasma that lives on a stack of N3 brains. This viscosity can be found by sending gravitational wave through this onto this system. So if we look at one particular graviton, it will hit the brains and then becomes the degrees of freedom that propagate in the brain, and then we have the absorption. So this is one way to think about the problem. Maldacena taught us that the same can be thought of as the process of absorption of gravitational wave by a black hole. So now we can formulate a problem as a problem of gravitational wave absorption by the horizon of the black hole. The horizon is where signal can only travel inward. Due to the existence of the horizon, we have the absorption of gravitational waves that flow to the horizon. And that corresponds to the viscosity of the stuff living on the D3 brains. Okay, so now let's collecting the facts that are known. First of all, we know that the viscosity is proportional to the absorption cross-section of low-energy gravitons by a black hole. On the other hand, we know from Einstein equation, this, unfortunately, I cannot show that without the equation, that the absorption cross-section is equal to the area of the horizon if the wavelength of gravity, if the wavelength is much bigger than the size of the black hole. If you have a black hole with a kilometer size, and we send gravitational wave with wavelength 100 kilometers, then the absorption cross-section is equal to the area of the horizon. On the other hand, we also know that the entropy of the plasma is equal to the entropy of the black hole, and the entropy of the black hole is proportional to the area of the horizon. So now if we divide the viscosity over the entropy of the plasma, in this case, the entropy per unit volume, we will find that the area of the horizon cancel out, and all is remains is some numerical factor that we get by being careful with this estimate. So what we find is that eta, the viscosity divided by the entropy, is equal to 1 over 4 pi. Now, so far I have put the Planck constant and the speed of light to 1, but we can use dimensional analysis to restore h bar and c on the right-hand side, and we find that eta over s, for this case, the n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory, is equal to h bar over 4 pi. What is interesting is that there is no velocity of light c. We will see here, we can interpret this formula as a finite viscosity at infinitely strong coupling. By infinitely strong coupling, I mean this regime in field theory where the expansion parameter, the top coupling, goes to infinity. That is the maximum coupling we can make in this theory, And in this regime, the viscosity is still finite. And there is a whole class of theories where we can write down the equivalent description in terms of theory with Einstein gravity. And in all these theories, eta over s, this ratio, has the same value, h bar over 4 pi. And this universality of eta over s is related to the properties of black hole horizon, that the absorption cross-section in Einstein gravity is equal to the area of the horizon. Now, let me explain why this ratio eta over s, that seems to be a ratio of two randomly chosen physical variables, both of which doesn't have anything to do with quantum mechanics, certainly would have the dimensionality of h bar. Let's just go back all the way to Maxwell and recall his formula for the viscosity. Eta is equal to rho VL. Rho is the mass density, V is the typical velocity of molecules, and L is the mean free path. So if we now recall that the entropy of a gas is to the zeroth approximation, very rough approximation, the number of particles, then the density of entropy would be proportional to the number density. There is a logarithm here, the logarithm of the ratio of temperature and the degeneracy temperature, but for the sake of this rough estimate, I will set the logarithm to 1. So S is proportional to N and is rho divided by M. Now, if we take the ratio eta over S, we will find that it is MVL. M is the mass of the molecules, V is the velocity of the molecules. So MV can be combined into the momentum of the molecules, but the momentum can be written as h bar divided by the de Broglie wavelength. So eta over s can be rewritten as h bar times the ratio of the mean free path and the de Broglie wavelength of the molecule. And usually when we think about the kinetic theory, like when Maxwell thought about picture of a gas, its molecules moving in straight line, colliding sometime with each other, the mean free path usually is much bigger than the Broglie wavelength. If the mean free path was smaller than the Broglie wavelength, then the notion of particle would not be applicable at all. Particle would have to, there is so much uncertainty that we cannot talk about the notion of particle. So if we use this estimate, that means that we have already assumed the mean free path to be bigger than the Broglie wavelength, and this eta over s cannot be much smaller than an h bar. Now, we can try to push the kinetic theory to its limits and try to go to the regime when the mean free path is of order the de Broglie wavelength. But then eta over s would be of order h bar. So using the uncertainty principle, we can argue, not rigorously, but we can argue that eta over s, this ratio, has to be bounded from below by h bar times some unknown coefficient. And now we know another fact, that the theories with gravity dual reach h bar over 4 pi. Therefore, it is tempted to conjecture, and we did that some times ago, that this ratio eta over s has to be bigger or equal to h bar over 4 pi. Okay, I will later mention that there are some examples where that show that this inequality cannot be correct. It's not correct, but this inequality is very interesting because it reminds us Purcell's question to Weisskopf, that the viscosity is bounded from below by some quantity, and in this case it's bounded from below by the Planck constant times the viscosity, that time the entropy density. Now there is no speed of light on the right hand side, so we can even compute eta over s for ordinary liquids and compare to this value that we obtained from string theory. And let's do it just for fun, for water. Here I plot the ratio eta over s of liquid water in unit of h bar over 4 pi. There is no reason I should choose that except for string theory. String theory tells me that this is a natural unit for eta over S. And I plot that as a function of temperature. I can also change the pressure. So in general, there would be a three-dimensional graph. In order to simplify the picture, I will plot that along the saturation curve, the line that separates the liquid phase from the gas phase. And you can see here that this ratio drops as a function of temperature to some minimum near the critical point. And then the, at the minimum, the value of eta over S is about 25 times of h bar over 4 pi. So here we have a calculation using the formalism of string theory that predicts the ratio eta of S for water within two orders of magnitude. Great triumph for theory. And we can also do that for different substances apart from water. We can observe one interesting thing that we observe there is that eta of S reaches the minimum near the critical point when liquid, the distinction between liquid and gas disappears, but it cannot achieve its minimum exactly at the critical point because according to the theory of dynamic critical phenomena, eta should diverge there. It reaches minimum very close to the critical point, but not exactly at the critical point. And the minimal value of eta over S varies from substance to substance, but generally it is about between, it is a few tenth of h bar over 4 pi. And the minimum among all substances is reached by the most quantum of the liquids, helium and hydrogen. Superfluids usually are thought as a fluid with zero viscosity, but actually, superfluids also have a non-zero finite shear viscosity that can be measured. And that is because superfluid have the normal component, and normal component has finite shear viscosity. Okay, so now let us discuss how can one try to measure the viscosity of the quark gluon plasma, given that the piece of matter that is created lives for a very short duration of time. So the way experimentalists have been trying to do that is ingenious. When you collide the two nuclei, you cannot control the impact parameter. You cannot make sure, you cannot aim the nucleus, one nucleus, to exactly the position of another nucleus. You have to live with many collision events where one nucleus collide with another nucleus with a finite impact parameter. Here, this is the first nucleus, this is the second nucleus. They go in direction perpendicular to the screen, and they overlapped only in this region. So in the beginning, you will create this region, that this hot region here. So typically, this event creates less particles than the most central of the events. So you can select out the events that create where you have created less than the maximal number of particles. Now, looking at these events, you will experimentalist sees that the distribution of particle is not actually symmetric. So the particle moving, it turned out that particle moving along this direction would have, along one direction, would have momentum much, well, considerably larger than the particle moving along the perpendicular direction. So there is an axial asymmetry distribution of particles. And it is explained in the following way. You create this drop of matter that would then flow according to some hydrodynamic equation. So the fluid would be pushed outward by the gradient of the pressure. And gradient of pressure is larger along this direction compared to the gradient of pressure along this direction. So the force that acts on a fluid volume is larger for the fluid element here. So as a result, at the end, you will see particle moving here with a larger energy than the particle moving here once the droplets has disintegrated into particles. And so this you can then associate the experimental measurable quantity called V2, the measurement of the azimuthal asymmetry, with the initial state asymmetry of the initial droplet. Now, if we turn on viscosity, then viscosity would reduce the effect because it will try to force different part of the fluid to move with the same velocity. So the viscosity reduces V2, and hydrodynamic simulation can give us estimates for the value of the viscosity. Okay, so here are the plots from one relatively recent attempt to simulate the expansion of the initial droplet and then compare the result with the experimental data. So the experimental data here are the azimuthal asymmetry as a function of momentum, transverse momentum, and these are the open dots. These are open dots, and different curves here correspond to the result of simulation with different different viscosities. And the two different graphs correspond to two different choices of the initial conditions. We don't know what kind of distribution of temperature in the initial block, so we have to use some model to do that. And there are some reasonable model. Two of them are Glauber and so-called CGC initial condition. So we will see here that in this Glauber model, initial condition, the most favored, the central value of order of S is 0.08. In the other choice, it's 0.16. Actually, at RIC, we do not know how to distinguish between the two pictures. But at LHC, there are additional quantities we can measure which seems to favor the left picture, the Glauber initial condition. So these authors made an estimate for eta over S, that eta over S is about 0.1 plus errors that are also as large as the number, 0.1. What is interesting is that this number is not too far away from 1 over 4 pi. 1 over 4 pi actually is very close to 0.08. And this gives rise to a qualitative picture of the quark-gluon plasma created at RIC as a strongly coupled quark-gluon plasma that is, in some sense, resembles the strong coupling limit of the, say, n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory that can be treated using the techniques of string theory. So, Brookhaven National Labs announced around 2005 the discovery of a liquid with very low viscosities. And the press release read that the degree of collective interaction, rapid thermalization, and extremely low viscosity of the matter being formed at RIC make this the most nearly perfect liquid ever observed. Let us check what is the viscosity of the quark-gluon plasma created at RIC. And we can do that very easily. We know eta is roughly h bar over 4 pi times the entropy density. And for the entropy density, for the sake of estimate, we can just take the entropy density of a free gas of quark and gluons. We know the temperature roughly, so we can put in this number here. And the result will be 10 to the 14 times the viscosity of water. That is actually very large. If you look at this table, the only thing that has a viscosity bigger than 10 to the 14 are glasses. So the viscosity of the quark-gluon plasma is very large in absolute terms. And this press release for the public mentioned the low viscosity, which has to be understood in the sense of the smallness of the ratio of viscosity and entropy density. But it's probably too complicated for the public to perceive. Okay, there is one interesting condensed matter analogy that I want to mention here. That is the hypothesis of minimal metallic conductivity. if we take a metal and then introduce impurities into the metal, the conductivity would decrease. And Mott, a long time ago, make a conjecture that the viscosity would jump from some finite value to zero when the mean free path of the electrons becomes comparable to the Fermi wavelength. Okay, the mean free path cannot be much shorter than Fermi wavelength. It's Mott's conjecture. However, theoretically we now know that this sigma, there are cases where the conductivity can go smoothly to zero. So the Mott's minimal conductivity hypothesis is actually not correct. The minimal conductivity is a useful concept that tells us the non-trivial regime where the conductivity goes to zero, but it is not a real absolute minimum of the conductivity. So we can ask, is there actually a bound on the viscosity? Is the viscosity actually has the minimal values? If we have some theory where we can change the parameter, can we make eta over s as small as we want? So at first we thought that there is a lower bound, h equal to h bar over 4 pi for this quantity, but subsequently people found examples where we can compute corrections to the ratio eta over s, and there are theories where the correction has a wrong sign, has a minus sign. So, however, there is no reliable way to go to the regime where this correction is comparable to 1. In some model studies that people see that bad things happen before eta over s reaches 0. There are things like causality is violated when we try to make eta over s less than some value time h bar over 4 pi. So there is still an open question whether what is the real minimum of h eta over s? Is that minimum 0, or there is some non-zero value that is the absolute minimum of the viscosity over entropy density? Okay, let me then mention one further application of gauge gravity duality, that we can have an effect where if we can see within using the gauge gravity duality, people have found one interesting effect that has not been noticed before, that if we have a rotating volume of quark matter with non-zero chemical potential, then the left and right-handed quarks will try to separate along the axis of rotation. We will have more left quark at the end. We have more left-handed quark in the upper hemisphere than if we have more right-handed quark in the lower hemisphere. And that it was seen first in gauge gravity duality, and then it was understood as the general feature of chiral relativistic hydrodynamics. And it originates from an effect in field theory called quantum anomalies. So it is a truly new, qualitatively new fact about hydrodynamics that was obtained using gauge gravity duality. So to conclude, we have seen surprising applications of string theory to a real-world problem, namely the quark-gluon plasma, which give us some new perspective to all problems. For example, we now can think about the quark-gluon plasma as a black hole, viscosity as gravity absorption. This suggests that eta over s is an interesting ratio to consider in the physics of the quark-gluon plasma, and it suggests that h bar over 4 pi is a particularly interesting value. And surprisingly, experimental measurements seems to indicate that the ratio eta over s for the real quark-gluon plasma is close to h bar over 4 pi. The most serious challenge that we have is to connect the string theory to the theory of strong interaction, QCD. The string theory methods can be applied to a class of quantum field theories, but this class does not include QCD. So there is still a very interesting puzzle why in the real quark-gluon plasma the ratio eta over s is close to the values obtained in a class of completely different theories. In this problem, we see that physics is one single subject. When we consider the quark, gluon, plasma, hydrodynamics, quantum field theory, static gravity, string theory, all give us complementary perspective. And we can learn by combining this perspective together. Thank you very much.